Welcome to PlayThink, conversations about games, interactivity, art, and culture. This podcast is recorded live at the USC Game Innovation Lab, which is part of the USC Games program at the University of Southern California. For more information, follow us on Instagram at USC Game Innovation Lab or visit our website at gameinnovationlab.com/playthink.
Hello, everyone here in person, and a big hello to all our listeners tuning in online. Welcome to PlayThink Salon, our first session in a while where we dive deep into worlds of games, art, culture, and interactivity. I'm Brian Sung, a second-year graduate student in the USC IMGD program, and I'm thrilled to be your host for this episode. As this year's Game Innovation Lab producer, I'm excited to bring these conversations to you. Today, we're so incredibly honored to have Crystal Rose Hazelton as our guest. Crystal Rose, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Crystal Rose is a Southeast Asian American game writer and developer who's contributed to some of the most well-known titles in the industry, Apex Legends, Hogwarts Legacy, and LEGO Brawls, just to name a few. Beyond her work, she's also a mentor, a speaker, and an educator, recently giving a talk at GDC called Creating Diverse Characters, Writing What You Know and Don't. And she's a voice that many writers look up to, so we're so excited to have her here on PlayThink Salon to talk about her journey and her insights today. So, Crystal Rose.
Very nice intro.
Let's dive right in. I love to talk about character creation. You've done such a great job carving out authentic characters like Conduit in Apex Legends. And I believe that is partly because you can write from a place of authenticity as a Filipino-American. But sometimes the job calls you to create characters that might have grown up very far from where you're born. When you're building these characters, especially those from cultures or identities that aren't your own, what's your process like? What kind of steps do you take to ensure that they feel authentic and well-rounded?
So I had the opportunity to work on all of the legends on Apex that are currently out and like a wide array of characters on Hogwarts. So depending on their storyline and their background and like also talking to the other writers, the first thing you do is start with the research. Like it's a lot of research. Even on Conduit, it was a lot of research. Like I looked a lot into the Spanish colonizing of the Philippines. I also looked a lot into the United States occupation of the Philippines. I also looked a lot into the colonization of Hawaii and like the way their monarchy was set up. And a lot of that was world building because I took over the planet Nexus and I asked the team if I could flesh out the political history of Nexus. And I wrote this really long document about the political history of Nexus that no one will probably ever see. But when it comes to all of the other legends and all of the other characters, you have to look into them too, because each of the, I think there are 26 legends out now. The 26 legends have an incredibly different array of like ethnicities, cultures, like gender identities. So you need to be true to what they are and also be incredibly cognizant of like the real life issues that the people who are facing that would identify with them, because even if it's in a fantasy setting, and for example in Apex, I know that the original writers of Apex and like Titanfall were not interested in like having like misogyny and racism be like a core tenet for like players to wade through. So when you're creating an environment like that, it can't be divorced from the fact that the people who are playing it who do identify with them are going to be facing those things. And so you still have to find ways to not pretend that doesn't exist for them. And so it's mostly research, and I think a lot of people will be surprised about how much like writing for fantasy or writing for science fiction is research-based.
What do you kind of like base that research, where do you start, in, for like, example, for Fantasyland?
I do start a lot with the lore. I try to learn a lot about the lore and read everything that is out so that I know where everyone's coming from and like sort of what their growing up for them would be like. Mm. And then I look at their real life identity and try to do research into that. For Rampart or Catalyst, I did a lot of research into like their backstories, and like Rampart's storylines don't have a lot to do with like being like an Indian daughter or mm-hmm. anything like that, but I wanted to know what the possibilities were. And also like with Catalyst, working on Catalyst, she was still in development when I was like looking over her documents. Like I wasn't the writer who was developing her. I think it was Ashley was. But like, you know, looking all over all of the documents Ashley wrote and then doing my own independent research, and then if Ashley wanted like feedback on things that were going on, there were like the other writers and then, you know, external resources and stuff. But then I could also have something to contribute because I did my own independent research. And one of the things I gave feedback on was like I wanted to see Catalyst in like a friend group setting more often, yeah. and like a community in like the Found family, because Ashley had already done great work setting up like the basis of like the coven and like the Found family, and I really wanted to feel like Catalyst was like very much a part of the community and really had support.
Yeah, and for the writers that maybe don't have such a great resource base, mm-hmm. starting out student writers, they do want to, you know, reach across and to write characters that are not part of culture. What would you kind of say to them? All it takes is just maybe like a search engine and going through a lot of data to create an authentic character?
I think like doing your research and like going through a search engine and like finding experiences is great and things mm-hmm. like that. But like you can also casually find experiences mm-hmm. like TikTok and Instagram Reels is a great resource. A lot of people like talk about their own experiences. But I also think finding a truth of your own experience that you identify with in that mm-hmm. character who's not of your same background is important. Because not everyone who plays Conduit or watches Conduit's content is going to identify with being Filipino or being like a Filipino mm-hmm. woman or anything like that, but they are going to identify with like loneliness or like moving away from home, and so those are things that I think they can identify with.
Yeah. And with that, I'm curious, when crafting a character, how do you decide how much of their cultural identity plays into their story or arc? Do you ever feel like you need to balance between the specifics of a character's background and their broader universal traits? And how do you know when a character's cultural trait becomes a trope or a stereotype?
Well, one of the first things I do when like researching is I try to find a list of like all of the tropes and like stereotypes to know when my own unconscious bias is like slipping in mm-hmm. or to know if unconscious bias is slipping in for like other writers, because I don't know everything about every culture or every sort of experience. So knowing when I'm veering into that territory and also knowing when, oh, hi. And also knowing when people will perceive what I'm doing as a trope or as a stereotype, but it is a true lived experience that mm-hmm. some people of that culture experience. We had the Filipino readers who read over my documents for Conduit, and I knew that there was going to be a nurse thing. I knew that there was going to be like a singing thing. I knew that there was going to be a basketball thing, and I was trying for a really hard time to scoop those away, because like it kept coming up and people like kept pitching it and like wanting those things, and I was like no, because that's one of the things like they know about, that's how they feel like they can contribute. But then when I talked to the Filipino readers, they're like, what if she liked basketball, what if she sang? And I was like, I know not all of them because I don't like karaoke, but it was something that, like, it is a true lived experience. There are a lot of Filipino nurses, but do we want Conduit to be a Filipino nurse? Yeah. And it's going to be a very strong reaction to if she does look nurse-like or has healing abilities. And so that was a large conversation that I had with the people who are directly working on Conduit, to be like, she does have shield healing abilities, but we don't want to lean into the visual aesthetic of her being a healer. And we don't want to, like, go into a lot of territory that, like, other games have gone into, which is, like, electrical powers. So Mike Panoff, the effects person, made it more like Magical Girl, like, it's very sparkly, instead of just being pure electricity. So, I'm sorry, what was the question? That was perfect. A long diversion.
I was curious, how did you straddle that balance of team? And you kind of practically answered that already, having those kind of conversations of kind of, like, leaning into representation without veering all the way into stereotype.
Yeah, and I don't think there's, like, going back to, like, the how much of a unique cultural identity to do with a character, I don't think there's really a percentage. Like, if it feels right, it feels right. And, like, sometimes you make a story and, like, you're never going, you decide that the way this character's personality is and, like, their forward momentum and, like, their arc is, like, you're never going to, like, really talk about, like, the issues that are facing them should they be in, like, the real world. But, like, with other characters, like, you are going to discuss it. And, like, other characters, it's, like, a discussion from the get-go.
Yeah. And when you talk about feeling right, is that more about listening to what your playtesters, internal playtesters, respond to this character? Is it about external playtesters? Or is it more of a gut instinct from the writer?
I think it's more based on the writer and, like, what they're interested in exploring with the character. And then you bring it to, and then after you've thought about it a lot, like for Conduit, there were a lot of different ways her story could have gone. And when I was developing her, she was actually a lot older, she was more serious, and then I got feedback that they wanted someone, like, funnier, and then we went down funny, and then she got younger, and then all of this sort of stuff. But, like, it's more about, like, how the writer is feeling, and, like, and then once you bring it to the team, all it matters what all of those people feel like. And so by the time it gets to, like, playtesters and, like, the storylines, like, you're not, like, constructing, like, a whole building. Like, you're tweaking, like, the interior design to, like, continue the metaphor. So I wouldn't say player feedback comes into it huge, but I am... Personally, I don't know if it's like this for all writers, but I am personally extremely cognizant of, like, what the audience is going to say, for good or for bad. Because when working on Conduit, I had this thing called the Comic-Con panel in my mind, and they would ask me the worst questions. They would hold me to task, and they would be like, why did you make these choices? Like, I don't like this, this, and this. Like, you could have done this. And so I knew what was going to happen, like, day one of, like, every choice that I made. Like, I had to have it backed up. I had to, like, have it researched. I had to, like, thinly, like, look over all of my own experiences to be like, is this a me experience? Is this a universal experience? And if it's a specific experience, why is it important that, like, Conduit also has it?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It depends. It depends.
I think you preemptively kind of answered my...
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's wonderful. But yeah, I want to know more about sort of like feedback. And you hear that feedback from Comic-Con, and, you know, if a character you've created, you hear online that, you know, from this culture, they shouldn't move like this, or they shouldn't behave like X, Y, and Z. How much of that do you take? How much of that do you integrate to your next iteration? Like, was there a time where feedback significantly impacted how you approach a future character?
Jacqueline and I talked a little bit about this in our GDC talk, but some of the conversations that happened as time went on with Gibraltar, because he was received well in certain portions, and as time went on, like, you sort of get a new lens and, like, new experiences, and, like, more people weigh in, and, like, more people come to the game. And then, again, I wasn't there when Gibraltar was made, and I think Mad Maggie came out the season before I joined the team, but I know that the team learned a lot from the conversations that were happening and then tried to take a lot of the learnings that they had seen and put it into Mad Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to like characters that I directly worked on, there were like some foundations of how we approached characters that had already been set up, and there were also things that I felt very strongly about doing for Conduit. Like, I requested that there were Filipino readers, and my boss was incredibly, like, super, super supportive, like, and, like, really helped me, like, be like, exactly, what exactly are we going to be looking for? Like, who are we going to be looking for? How big is the group should be? And, like, kind of guided me through that. And I also was like, even though, like, I'm Filipino-American, I would love to have someone who's completely divorced, like, their job is completely divorced from the everyday to give feedback that, like, maybe I'm thinking, but I can't give feedback on every single piece, because if you're allowed like 5 comments, not that like that's a thing in video games, but like when we're talking about social capital, if like social capitally everyone has this unspoken agreement of giving 5 pieces of feedback, so no one's giving too much feedback, if I'm the only person giving cultural feedback, like I don't get to give feedback on creativity, I don't get to give feedback on like the story, and so my boss, Amanda, she, you know, found a way, and Sabrina as well, Sabrina Ma, the producer, found a way to get us an external consultant who, you know, is Filipina. She works in film. She works on her own independent projects and things like that, to come in and give me cultural feedback that she felt, but also be able to give other teams cultural feedback. So I had like these 2 avenues of like support as well for me personally. And I wouldn't say that's super common in this industry. That's something I've never experienced before. So that was really, really great.
I never heard of the 5 common. Is it like a quota or no? It's like a budget.
No. It's like, it's not an actual budget, but like imagine if somebody sent you a script, like you sent your script off to someone, right?
Yeah.
And the script has every single line highlighted, and you're just like, okay. Yeah. And like they're talking about like what's wrong culture, not wrong, but like they're giving you feedback on culture, they're giving you feedback on like grammar and like structure, and then the storyline itself.
Yeah.
That's overwhelming, right? And so usually when you give feedback, you're like, what is the most important piece of feedback? How am I also being supportive to their vision and like things like that when it comes to feedback? And if you're paring down all of the thoughts you have on someone's script to the most 5 important comments you have, if all of my comments are on like a cultural reading or some sort of like diversity reading, inclusion reading, then I don't get to be like, hey, you've misspelled this on every single sentence sort of thing. Like you don't get to get to the story side of it, because you've then become a cultural reader instead of just a writer or an editor.
So you kind of want to spread it out holistically in terms of your feedback. That makes a lot of sense,
just to add on to that, because I often think the diverse members of your team are doing a lot of cultural reading that other members of the team don't really realize, and then they end up sort of being expected to always cultural read. In a way that not every member of the team is, because maybe they don't have like the comfortability or familiarity or understand like the nuance.
You touched a little bit on this already, but I imagine like working on really large franchises like Hogwarts Legacy and, you know, Apex Legends, there's a lot of restrictions. So do you find these franchises imposing restrictions, does it breed creativity? Or does it limit you in terms of development? How do you navigate these limitations while staying true to authentic representation?
Working with large franchises definitely comes with their own sets of rules, and also like a precedent that has been set by like the lore and the IP and everything that's going on. So it is like a sandbox that like you know you can work in, and then if you're trying to like, you know, stretch the sandbox, it's kind of like an approval process that you have to go through, or like talking to other people and like backing things up, like, does this make sense for the world? And sometimes people are like, of course it makes sense for the world. Mm-hmm. Like, of course this would happen. And then other times you do like run into issues. So when it comes to authentic representation, it's in what ways can this work within the foundations of the world that's been set up? Like I said, there's, for Apex, they didn't want to like do misogyny and they didn't want to do racism, but like Jacqueline and I worked on a storyline for Seer, it's already out, this isn't a spoiler, where we wanted to talk about the responsibility that Seer has, that has been placed on Seer, to speak up for his planet when no one else is carrying that weight, which I think, you know, nicely slots into the metaphor of like, when you are like a minority or like a marginalized voice, people are like, oh, well, like, why wasn't this good enough? Like, why aren't you like doing mentorship? Like, why aren't you like helping like your own people or like things like that? And so we were trying to do that with Seer too, to be like, Seer wanted to be like a celebrity and like be in the Apex Games, and that was kind of all he was expecting to do. But then his planet is dying and everybody's like, well, what are you doing with the money? Like, why aren't you like helping out? Like, why aren't you like a philanthropist now? And in the storyline, spoilers, when Seer does try to like veer and help, it ends up being misconstrued and like unsavory rich people like twist his words into making other things happen that end up hastening the destruction of like his planet. Mm-hmm. But it's all laid at his feet and not the people who like twisted his words. So there are ways to find pathways in. Mm. I think when there are still restrictions.
Yeah. While crafting that story, did you get a lot of pushback from the studio that this wasn't the direction that they wanted to take, or a story that they wanted to tell, or?
No, mm-hmm. But like there were some pieces of feedback, like from people who, like they moved us away from the theme, because they didn't understand like the theme of like having that mantle placed upon you, mm-hmm. like not understanding. But like once Jacqueline and I sort of like explained it or like pushed back on it, they understood. It's not like you have to take every piece of feedback every single time.
Yeah, there's a lot of like replying to comments on Google Docs that looks like navigating through these conversations.
Yeah, but like when that was like, I think one of the first storylines Jacqueline and I pitched, like we had a lot of support at like from like our boss Amanda and from like the producer and stuff to have it happen. And yeah, we went through the recordings and everything, so.
Excited. Yeah. So I want to ask about like your mentorship experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've mentored for many aspiring writers. I've heard you've probably read countless portfolios. And there are a lot of people trying to break into the industry,
game writing
in general, especially from underrepresented backgrounds. Do you have any advice that you want to give creatives who are looking to find their voice in game writing? Should they focus on showcasing their unique backgrounds, or is it more valuable to concentrate on writing characters with broader appeal?
I understand where your question is like getting at, but I'd like to push back that like unique backgrounds don't have universal appeal, because like when I think about when I played Uncharted, am I a white man from New England who was an orphan who experienced his brother dying, but his brother really went to jail and then found him later and then, you know, reconnected with him? No. Like, that is an incredibly unique experience that's presented, like, in, like, it's presented as like Nathan Drake is like super relatable. I'm sorry, I almost always call him Nathaniel Drake because I played them in quick succession over the pandemic and I a little bit lost my mind when I played those games. They're very good. But that is a character that like they just assume like you can like slip into easily, and you do slip into like playing mm-hmm. him easily, and that's because he's a likable character and like it's like fun gameplay, but his world experience, his life experience is incredibly niche. But in games as a whole, like that's presented as like a universal experience. So I think when you are from an underrepresented background, there are facets of your experience that are very unique. But I hesitate to like say that they're niche or not universal, because there are universal parts of everyone's experience that like, again, even if you're not Filipino, you're going to understand like the mm-hmm. loneliness of Conduit's storyline. You're going to understand what making new friends and like not super having mm-hmm. it pan out is like. But if you are Filipino, you're going to catch like all of the nicknames that her family members have and go, oh yeah, Filipinos have the best nicknames, right? I just want to push back on like that part of the question. But when it comes to like putting together your portfolio, if you want to like, I would say it's obvious when you're interested in what you're doing. Mm. Like if everything in your portfolio is about pirates, they're going to assume you want to work on a pirate game. And if you're applying to a game that is not a pirate game, mm-hmm. you're probably not going to get it. So more so than like, leaning into unique backgrounds or universal backgrounds, I would more be like, what is the tone of the thing that you are applying to right now? And like, what are you interested in career-wise? Yeah. Is this going to take you farther away from your goal or closer to your goal? And at first in your career, your goal is going to be, I would like a job in games. Mm-hmm. And then as time goes on, you can sort of hone in on what kind of experiences you want and like what kind of games you want to write for. And if writing a character that is like your background is really important to you, you're going to stop putting pirates. I mean, I guess if you're a pirate, you're going to stop putting pirate stories in your portfolio, and you're going to start putting things that resonate with you in your portfolio.
Yeah.
Because like my portfolio when I started out was super, super broad. Like I had in stuff for a shooter. I had in stuff for like action adventure. I had somebody asked me to like write a smutty one and then I like handed it in and they were like, this isn't smutty. And I was like, well, you asked for a Bridgerton piece, but then you said Victorian. So I don't think you know what you're talking about either. Cause Victorian and Regency are different. So you're going to want to try everything. And like, eventually you're going to find things that you would never want to write again. And for me, it was smut.
And for the writers that are lucky enough to get like a writing test mm-hmm. on maybe like a hero-based shooter, and the pitch is like, pitch me a hero concept within our IP world, you would tell them to sort of lean into their unique voice, lean into what writing what they know, but still paying homage to the universe that they've created.
Yes, I think if you were to get that test, you would want to pitch like something you actually would want to see. And that's something that I actually talked about in my interview when I was at Apex. Like somebody offhandedly like asked me that question. They were like, what would you do to Apex? And like, I probably should have been a little bit softer, a little bit more savvy with it. But I was like, you know what I would love? I would love a Southeast Asian character in the game. And they were like, ooh, yeah, like bad. It's like, I would love
Were you afraid to say that? Like,
no, see, the thing is like, I sort of lost my mind, and like, they like said it, and I like said it, and then I was like, oh, maybe I should have
said that. Yeah.
Maybe I should have like massaged the room a little bit more. But like, because I said that and they responded to it, and like it became an open discussion of like what, you know, what that would look like and, you know, what I would do, I realized that they cared. And sometimes you'll walk into a room and like maybe you do say something like that and you'll realize the room doesn't care, and then you're like, maybe this will be a really difficult place for me to work. If they like the values like sort of like don't match up, or like they don't respond to the things that like you're interested in story-wise. But like I ended up having a really great conversation. I think it was Bilal and Amanda who had asked me, with Bilal and Amanda regarding that. And then when I got like tapped to write a character, I was like exploring a lot of different ethnic backgrounds. And I think Amanda was like, oh, you don't want to write a Filipino character? And I was like, well, I was getting to that. Like, I didn't want to out of the gate be like, I would like to write a Filipino character. But again, Amanda and like the team were like very supportive, because they knew that like it was something I always wanted to see, but I wasn't sure if like that was the right time to do it. Because I was also looking at like the broad spectrum of all of the characters and the cast, and like all of the personality types. And so I had gotten the kit, and I was trying to see like what personality, what backstory, and ethnicity was something that I was trying to think of a little bit later. But for me, it was something also like with certain personality types I knew are, you know, sort of the only personality type that are represented for certain groups. And so you also need to be cognizant, at least for me, am I helping the people like push back against like some of the stereotypes that are out there in media currently, or am I veering into them? And how much of the characters that I'm creating now, am I going to make it the lived experience of those people harder? So there's like a lot of responsibility when you're working on like a big, big budget game that are going to have so many eyes on them. So it was a lot of stress. When they told me I was getting the kit, I was, we really did investigate everything, but they always were sort of like, you want to work great at Filipino character? And I was like, yeah, I do.
You kind of have to feel out the right time, like you said, and kind of pick your battles when you're in such a mass company.
Yeah. I'm not super great at picking my battles, but you should pick your battles. Don't be like me.
Oh, thank you so much. That was really inspiring advice.
Yeah.
I think many young writers will resonate with that. I kind of am curious if anyone on the floor would like to ask a question, if anything that our conversation sparked off something in your head. We would love to hear from you, and the people at home too would probably love to hear from you too. So, we have one, so.
Hello there. Thank you so much. This is really insightful. The NGP that I'm working on right now here is based on a Cambodian-American, that story. How do you, in terms of writing these diverse characters, when it comes to cultures that are kind of like combinations of Cambodian-American, is specific and in ways different than Cambodian, how does that kind of differ in your experience compared to writing, does it differ at all?
I would say it differs quite a lot, because when writing Conduit, I knew that like the way she was going to be received was going to be different across like the diaspora. So I knew that Filipinos, like different parts of the Philippines or Filipinos, would feel one way, and I thought that Filipino Americans might feel a different way. And like one of the things that I thought about a lot and I worried about a lot, when it came to casting, was specifically accent. And accent, I think, is a huge discussion like we're having across like media, and like what that means. And so when you approach your Cambodian or like Cambodian American character, I think part of it is going to be about Like, am I talking about, like, are they first generation? Are they second generation? Are, like, they immigrated? Like, what sort of things are they facing? Like, are they, like, multiracial? Are they biracial? Do they have parts of their identity that go, not against, but would cause some strife in a traditional family? Veil Guard, a Dragon Age Veil Guard, does this. It's early on in the game, so hopefully this isn't like a huge spoiler. But like Tasha's storyline is about being multicultural, and like thinking about their gender identity and like the way that they express it. And so like the way that story is approached is going to be different than if like Tosh was a Qunari like in the Qun instead of like someone who grew up outside the Qun but is still learning the traditions of it. So are you Cambodian American?
No, our director is.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but
okay.
Our director is.
Yeah, so I think there are pieces that are definitely going to be different because I think it's also about the way people feel about their own culture too, because like some people are really proud of it and some people like are ashamed of it and some people like are like still in the process of learning about it. So it's kind of, you know.
Fluid.
Yeah.
I'm Indian American, so I'm kind of in that third category of learning about it.
Yeah. Myself. Yeah, and it's going to be a little bit difficult because it's so personal, and probably your director is finding that out, of like the hardness that it is to like sift through like what it means and like also the quirks that you don't know that you have, like even within body language and like tone of voice and things like that. So yeah, good luck.
I'm curious, what are the best tools for research that Anuja's team could use to come up with an authentic experience in your?
I do think researching and Google searching is really good, but if you want like a really personal experience, I would go to TikTok. because people are going to talk about what it's like to be like a first generation Cambodian daughter and like what it's like being the eldest daughter and like how that's different, how that family dynamic is different if she was like the oldest brother or things like that. And like they're also very forward with their experiences and like their personal struggles in a way that you won't find in like hard data. But with hard data, you're able to look at, one proof. You can be like, look at this. it's more universal than you think. And when you go to TikTok and you're finding other people's personal stories, you're not having to, you know, have the person whose lived experience it is have to like comb through all of their deep personal experiences and then lay them out for you. So TikTok.
Okay, make sure the writer has one.
Then we'll go to eBay. Yes. Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Great talk. I wanted to ask more about like the difference in writing like a live service game where the character's story continues on after release versus like a traditionally boxed shipped game where you don't really do updates in the story. Specifically, I mean, I may be biased because I know like Apex lore more than other people, but like Apex does things where like they would release like short form lore videos on like social media. And that's like one of the bigger ways that lore was like delivered to people.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to see like how does it feel as from a writer's point of view dealing with live service narrative versus shipped.
So box products versus live service. Box product. one, for virtue of like it all releasing at the same time, it takes longer to make. Like box products now, I would say, especially in AAA, take anywhere from like 4 to 10 years to make a game. But because of that, I wouldn't say the writing is going slowly, but you have the opportunity to like start from scratch and throw everything out. And I've been on projects where we started from scratch multiple times, where just all of the writing was thrown out. And then we start again, and then it gets thrown out, and then we start again. So that is something that is harder to do on live service, because you know every 3 months you're shipping something. And so what you have to do on a live service game is you have to stagger. So when I was working on Apex, we were almost always working on like 4 seasons from now, 8 seasons from now, 2 seasons from now, 1 season from now, all at the same time. And so you have to get a little bit confused about what's out and what's not, which is the really hard thing. And you do have to like rely on the other writers. And in my opinion, writing for a live service can be really nice, because you know that the things you're writing are going to ship and they aren't going to get thrown out every once in a while. So it's a really different approach, because it's so much faster to work on live service. And you don't have a lot of time to like noodle and like rethink. And so box products, in a lot of ways, in my opinion, is a lot slower. Because I could open up a mission that I had worked on a year ago and then decide it's all unlocked and I'm rewriting it because there's a new mechanic that I'd like to utilize, or something's been cut and I need to like rewrite it. Whereas you can't unlock something in live service. Like, if you've written it and you've told your team that it's ready to go, like, sorry, you don't get a second chance. You need to be sure. So in that way, I find live service a little bit harder to do. But there are vastly different opinions on that. Yeah.
Do you feel like there's a pressure to keep that ball afloat in live service, where the story just keeps going and going, and there's a writer like, I want to end the character arc, but we still have to do 50 more seasons of this, you know?
Yeah, and there's like, it's a treadmill too. Like, you'll be like, I just finished that task and now I have to do that task again. Mm-hmm. But keeping the ball aloft is really important. And like, you also have to make sure that as these set of characters storyline is like coming to a close, that like you've already begun to set up another story arc that people can grab onto, so that even though something is ending, something is at its Apex, and then like continuing on and like making sure. So in that way, it's a bit like a telenovela, or like more like a season of TV. Whereas I would say a box product might be more akin to like a movie, and like it's final and it's finished. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to like think about like weaving the other characters quite as much, because you kind of have like a main cast. But in live service, everyone's main cast.
Yeah.
I have a game question, actually. Because I was like a super huge fan of Apex Legends, and thank you so much for creating all those like amazing characters, stories. And when I was playing Conduit, actually, I realized that I felt the most, I identified the most with the responsibility.
Yeah.
Especially after I watched the trailer, the story from Outlines.
Oh, thanks.
Actually, the trailer's name was like For Us, Wutang Naloop, which I understood was like you need to repay the debt of some like priceless favor, favor from a hero,
right?
Not from specific like a close person. And actually, when I was playing the character, I feel the same, because when you play other characters in the game, you always care about yourself. And when your teammates need your help, it's always like help me or like save me. Where are you? When you're playing Conduit, you need to care about their health. You need to care about where are they, what are they doing, and are their shield corrupted?
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I want to ask, like, for this kind of responsibility and this kind of like a burden you have,
but that burden and responsibility not come from your power, just come from you want to take it.
So yeah.
You build your power to take it, and that feeling feels loneliness.
Mm.
So I just want to ask, how do you feel about this responsibility of yours?
The responsibility of conduits?
Uh-huh.
I really wanted to set it up because, like, again, the first thing I got was her kit. Like, I knew what her abilities would be, and the abilities ended up changing a little bit throughout her development. But it was built, like, the abilities were inspired by the Monarch Titan, and when I saw the kit, the core tenet of her felt like self-sacrifice, and like, what's more self-sacrificing than one of the oldest daughters of a Filipino family? So I wanted her story to reflect her kit as much as possible, and like, point to the kit as much as possible, and I knew that the kit had come from the Monarch Titan, so I wanted the Monarch Titan to be part of the storyline. And I wanted you as the player to like feel a debt and like a responsibility for like your team members. But I didn't want it to feel like a drag, because you know, like sometimes when you're playing on a team and you're the healer and they're like, pick me up. And you're like, okay, well, I just picked you up. But having it be like her personality supporting the fact that she would want to help them, because like, they're people she admires, they're people who inspired her. So that's the approach I wanted to take with that. And I also think that there's, like, a really big player toxicity problem in live service games. So I never wanted, because by virtue of her abilities, they are outwardly focused, whereas some of the other characters, there's, like, more of a boon to yourself. I wanted her to be also kind to you as the player, especially if you were new. So if you ping things, she teaches you about the game. She teaches you about the other characters in the world. She teaches you about the world. But she should also feel like a supportive best friend in your ear who's like, you know, we didn't, like, if you play Revenant, he's like, oh, skin bag, like, we did terrible, you know? But, like, Conduit, she's like, oh, we'll get him next time. We'll, like, try a little harder. We'll study a little bit more. So what is more annoying than like someone who feels like a martyr? Because like, that is her kit. Her kit is very self-sacrifice, and we did try some martyr personality types, and you know, it was annoying. So when it comes to the responsibility and the duty of Conduit, it should feel like so intrinsic to her personality that like, you feel it too.
And do you feel like, you talked about receiving the kit first and then sort of having that narrative support it. Do you feel like it would be more liberating if narrative took the lead and sort of kind of chart out the character first and then design comes in? Or do you feel like having those design constraints really help kind of inspire a narrative?
I think the design constraints really help on a game like Apex. I think on some games, story should come first, but I think on other games, design should come first.
Mm-hmm.
For Apex specifically, it is a battle royale. Like, there's not a lot of time to, like, divulge lore, like, in a game, because you're, like, it's moment to moment. Like, you're getting shot at. Like, you're getting grenades thrown at you. You can't be like, ah, the air is so crisp. I love winter. Because you're getting shot. So it being designed first makes a lot of sense. But when we get to, like, some box products, like, I think, like, Baldur's Gate,
mm-hmm.
Baldur's Gate makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, I know they're building around the constraint of, like, D&D and, like, paper D&D and things like that. But it makes a lot of sense to, like, do the story and then be like, we're filling in a puzzle here, because narratively it's, like, either slow here and then we're going to get a cutscene later. So it really depends on the game. And I also think, depending on people's discipline, they'll disagree, because everyone's discipline is the most important discipline.
Mm-hmm.
So game designers like want to say that game design is always the most important, and writers always want to say the writing is most important. When I'm playing a game personally, I think the writing is the most important part, because I'm most curious about what's going on with the story. But on a working basis, getting the kit for Conduit was super helpful. I think if it was the other way around, if I had been able to just pitch whatever backstory and not hone it into the kit, I think she probably would have been a lot weaker of a character and maybe a lot less interesting of a character. And they gave me a lot of like runway with the short that you mentioned for us, Utang Na Loob. It ended up, like, the final trailer ended up extremely similar to, like, the first draft that I had written. It's like, some scenes got changed a little bit just because of, like, budget and, like, the amount of characters that we were allowed to include. But, like, even the dialogue is fairly similar. And, like, I have the final draft of the script, like, on my website. Mm-hmm. And you can see the small things that changed just from the final draft of, like, storyboarding. But it's pretty much exactly the same from the final draft. I think I did 2 or 3 revisions of the draft, and they weren't huge revisions. And, like, I've written other things for Apex where they did get huge revisions, and, like, the script did end up very different. But that trailer ended up very much the same because we were all in agreement on her core tenet being self-sacrifice and, like, feeling how that was passed down on from her from another generation who saved Nexus.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Yeah. Are there any other questions from the floor? Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like what happens a lot in the games industry, specifically like the AAA games industry, oftentimes it starts building out their own stereotypes within like the overall games industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, the Electric Filipino.
Yes.
Black Americans having the Killmonger haircut.
Yes.
Like a bunch of that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How, I guess, my first question is why do you think that happens, and then also like what are steps that people should be taking in order to avoid that type of stuff? Because I feel like a lot of these stereotypes aren't within, like they're only within games. They don't happen outside in the actual world.
Yes, and what's really interesting, like for Electric Filipinos and the Killmonger cut. So what happens, I think, within a lot of creative industries is that Black Panther was so successful, but also so salient to so many people. Like, what's the elementary school show called?
Abbott Elementary.
In Abbott Elementary, like, Black Panther is so salient, they make a joke about, like, a little white boy dressing up. And, like, that's how big Black Panther was. And when it comes to trying to make like studio and like huge amounts of money move, you need to point to the most successful things as like proof that like, oh yeah, Filipino people do exist in America. So like you really do have to arm up and like produce like success stories almost of like why it worked. And so I think the Killmonger cut keeps happening because people are like, everybody loved Black Panther. Everybody loved the way he looked. Like, it was different. It was interesting. He looked hot as hell. Like, and so that permeated through games. And so when you look at concept boards, people usually have, if like you're doing like a black character, people will include character designs from Black Panther, and like from like the different like Wakanda cultures. From those movies and from the comics to be like, oh, well, this is a really interesting way like fantasy and sci-fi has approached African cultures. And so you'll see that pop up again and again and again because they were able to prove it was successful. But then people tire of it really quickly because then you've established your own trope in video games and in media, and you're now following a trend. And with Electric Filipinos as well, I knew that Electric Filipinos was becoming a developing trope, and I was very outspoken about it. But by virtue of the kit that we had and the fact that like I was going to be making a Filipino character, I knew that I had to speak up about the way that it was expressed. So like, her abilities not being yellow, like the way her outfit looks, like the hair textures that we had on her, the things she says like shouldn't be like that's veering into Watson territory anyway, and we can do that for that reason, but like you do have to be incredibly cognizant, and like the rest of your team needs to be incredibly cognizant of it, but oftentimes teams aren't, or they are and they have to produce it as like, these characters were really successful and really salient, and by virtue of not trying to do other things, they end up doing those things. Because you really will, if like you chart it for like a lot of different characters, you'll see it, like you'll see East Asian hackers. You'll also see like Asian women always have purple hair, or like a purple stripe or something like that. And it's because they're like on concept boards or like idea boards, they're going to the characters that was success either financially, like with players and things like that, and then it ends up becoming its own trope, and you, again, you need to be keeping up on that, that like it is a responsibility that when you make a new character, are you feeding into the trope or are you going in a different way? And I had I think actually you guys had the writer for Zeri and Neon, or one of the developers, Michael Guo, came. And like I had read some of the developer blogs that like those teams had done and like the reasons why they had made those choices, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't like fully attributing to the trope in the work that I was doing. And like there's varying success, like when I see the feedback, when I see like the comments, I'm like, you know, you're right. But there's also a level of like you as a person, like you can't control everything. Like you can tell people, you can say things, but it's also about like what is moving forward. Yeah. Any other questions?
If not, we can wrap up. I think, yeah, we spent a lot of time with us. Thank you so much. This brings us to the end of our Plaything Salon episode. Crystal Rose, thank you so much for sharing your journey, your insights, and your advice. And it's been an inspiring conversation. Where can people find you online if you want to follow your work, keep in touch? What would be a good avenue to reach out to you?
You can go to my website, crystalrosehazleton.com. I have a bunch of different stuff on there. I have things I've written. I have like behind-the-scenes things, writing samples, my GDC talk. If you need help writing a cover letter, there's stuff there. I'm also very recently on Blue Sky, so you can also find me on Blue Sky at Hello Hazleton. If people also have questions, I have an open form on my website. I try to help out as much as I can, but if I'm not messaging you back, it's probably because I'm busy.
And thank you for giving us an excuse to revisit TikTok again. thank you so much for people who came by, and thank you for tuning for people online. We hope today's discussion sparks some new ideas and inspires you to explore storytelling in your own way. Stay curious, keep creating, and we'll see you next time at Plaything Salon. Take care!